ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I'm speaking with AJ Saunders. Now, AJ is a site builder, affiliate marketer. He's been working with online businesses for around 10 years now, and been working in the affiliate content site space for around three or so years. So, he's relatively new into the website investing space, I guess, but has been doing online for a while and kind of has been on a journey that we discuss like in getting there. So currently he's, in his own words, like built one of the most successful or the biggest home automation sites, affiliate sites in the UK. It's currently making around 500 Great British pounds a month, which is around, off the top of my head, $6,600, maybe $6,700 US dollars a month. So doing pretty well. And so we talked to him, you know, about his journey and kind of how he got to where he is today through the different things that he tried in online and digital space in the last kind of 10 years. And we talk about some of the ways that he goes about building his sites or building his site and structuring it and how he's kind of managed to get to the point where he's making a decent, four-figure sum every single month from that. So, very actionable episode, I hope. Very much like talking about hands-on stuff that he does every day and that hopefully we can share with you today. So without further ado, I'll move on to the show.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I have with me AJ Saunders. Welcome, AJ.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Thank you. AJ, you're also in the UK with us in the cold
Indeed.
Weather at the moment.
Indeed, yeah.
I say it's cold. Like, depends on where in the world. It's kind of all relative, isn't it? But, I mean, it's
yeah. I have some friends in, like, Eastern Europe and in Russia, and it's like, he says to them, I'm currently dealing with three, and they're like, yeah, it's minus two here.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, great.
Yeah. I mean, we had a little bit of, did you have any snow the other day?
We didn't, and that's what makes it unbearable for me, because, like, I can deal with the cold if I get a little bit of snow, but if it's just cold with no snow.
Yeah. I mean, it looked like it was a blizzard for about an hour, but then it just turned to ice because it was so cold really quick, and there wasn't much else. So, a bit strange for November, really, to have, like, snow. But,
Indeed,
that's the way the world's going, isn't it, I suppose? Like, don't expect what you used to expect, but... you're down in Bath, which is for anybody who doesn't know the UK too well, it's kind of more the west, southwest of England.
Correct. Yeah.
And, between me and Adam. So Adam's based in South Wales and I'm based in Reading. So yeah, you're kind of,
I'm pretty
almost
much
halfway.
So, yeah. So for the people that watch Bridgerton, which I guess probably isn't anyone listening, you know, if you watch Bridgerton, then you know what Bath looks like, because that's a setting for Bridgerton. But anyway,
yeah,
that's our newest claim to fame.
Right, yeah, I don't know how global that is. I don't know if that goes out around the world or not, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, okay. I have loads of American friends that are amazed by it. And it's like, no, it's quite crass. Go watch the Jane Austen things that she wrote, actually, when she was living in Bath, you know, in the 18th century, because that's more nuanced and more kind of subtle. But anyway.
well, welcome to the show. And like, thanks for taking the time to come on. AJ, wanted to get AJ onto the show because he's had some good success. He's been working. Well, I'll let you do the introduction, but you've had some good success. I won't do anything else as well. Anything about your background, I'll let you do that. So, yeah, AJ, for the audience, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself. And
sure. So, I'll just give you a brief history, and then you can jump in with some questions, hopefully. So, I left school. I went and did music in London. Did that for about 5 years. Really enjoyed that, but didn't make any money. Came back, discovered people like Neil Patel and Pat Flynn, and got really involved in making money online about a decade ago. And from there, I did stuff like eBay. I then started up a little jewelry company that was really, really interesting. I was the first person in the UK to have Maserati watches, to do Brera Aureology, which is an American-Italian brand, which is quite famous in America especially, and lots of other little really, really cool brand launches. I then from there got into affiliate marketing. I along the way I've released some guitar ebooks, because that's primarily what I was doing in my first career, if you like to call it that. And now I build affiliate websites, and I now have a small consultancy where I essentially coach people how to build blogs for their business. So that's a little brief history of me.
Awesome. So in terms of the watch business, yeah, so that's kind of interesting. So does that still exist or not anymore?
So no. So that was really, really interesting. I learned a load about kind of digital marketing and about SEO, but it failed after about 2.5 years. But I learned so much about, you know, managing websites, managing, you know, team members, doing SEO, email lists, you know, building a profitable business. Because I think a lot of people get into this and they think, you know, sales is profit, and it's not. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I think that there are lots of things that I learned that have actually helped me kind of inform how I deal with things going forwards, and how like I approach them from a strategic point of view. But yeah, it didn't work out as well as I hoped.
Yeah. Yeah, so I used to have a traditional kind of agency that helped local businesses, and I helped the guy set up an e-commerce site for watches as well, and he used to do the same. So they were kind of, he was the, I don't know what the right terminology is, but like the UK distributor maybe, or for
right. Yeah.
a bunch of brands. So they came into him in the UK, but if anybody else in the UK wanted them, and I think they got them from him. So he was kind of like the hub almost. So he kind of had some like kind of unique-ish kind of Swiss brands. I think he made his own one in the end. Not a particularly huge company. He sold a lot mostly through Amazon. Although that was the bane of his life. Right. I think the margins, they squeezed him so bad on margins that it was hardly worth it almost. So.
Yeah.
He gave me one horror story from Amazon as well, where they would buy stock from him to keep stock on hold, but they'd actually pay him full price for that. I don't even we wouldn't even thought that would exist, but apparently this is kind of what happened to him, or something like this. Anyway, I might have got it slightly wrong, but they paid bought loads of stock off him, so he had like 40 or 50 grand worth of watches in there, and they did for a while. But after a couple of years, when like a bunch of them hadn't sold, like they sent them all back to him and sent them the bill for the watches.
Yeah.
So yeah. I've never got involved in like any of that kind of stuff with Amazon, but like I think it was quite a shock of a bill to try and to eat like years later when he thought that was already money in the bank, you know. So
it did seem one of my best friends works for Amazon, and he's just changed jobs recently, but he was doing like vendor returns at one point. And he was saying, you know, they were destroying like perfectly good sunglasses because the brand didn't want them, and they were like two seasons ago, so they were no use to anyone essentially. And I was saying to him, being an entrepreneur, of course, why can't you just like put them in a bag and eBay them, because there's still some value to them, right? And there's still somebody out there that will probably want them, but that's not their corporate policy. So, but apparently, it was easier for the brand just to say destroy it than to return them and try and eBay them or try and retail them themselves, which again makes
just insanity. Well, wow.
So cool.
Yes. Yeah. So did you get involved in Amazon, or is it just direct sales that you generally were working with?
So I generally did direct sales. So I ran a lot of PPC. I did a lot of retargeting. Did quite a bit of email. Did quite a bit of social. I found Amazon can be difficult if you're targeting certain brands, because certain brands are now very anti eBay and Amazon. Mm-hmm. Which I understand why, because they're obviously trying to protect their retail, like physical retail partners. I understand that, but also I think it's harder and harder to stand out on these platforms because, you know, I think, I was looking yesterday at a keyword software that was telling me Amazon ranks for over 2 billion keywords. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you stand out in that? You can't.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're a niche kind of small business that's competing in terms of organic search or kind of paid search, I think there's more opportunities there. Mm. So, and then the other thing that I always come back to is, and I guess this is just my control freak nature, right? So excuse me on this one, but I like to be in control of the farm. I've always found like Amazon, eBay are fantastic for what they are, but you don't own the asset. And so you're always going to be, if you build like a successful FBA business, you may have to sell it for a good multiple, right? But I think the multiple will be higher if you're doing your own e-commerce site and you're generating traffic and you're generating customer loyalty that mm-hmm. way. And the other thing is like towards the end of my time, eBay got really, really hot about not using other people's email addresses, so you can't even, if somebody buys now, I don't think you can even add them into your email sequence, which is pointless. Yeah. And then doing things like even contact them, so if you have a problem, you can't phone them. Yes, some of the best customers I had, I spoke to on the phone and I could say, you know, this is what's happened, you know, can we solve it this way or that way? Whereas, you know, with eBay and especially with Amazon, you can't do that, and that to me breaks down.
That makes it challenging,
essentially.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Because I had one customer who bought a watch and I didn't label it right on the website, so he got sent the wrong watch, which is completely my fault. And so he phoned me and I said, right, the three options are you can return it for a full amount of money, give you a discount, you can keep it, or I can check with the supplier and see if we can change it. And he said, we'll do number three. So I was like, okay, great, let's do that. And I phoned the supplier and just said, look, can you change it for me? He's got it, it's working, it's fine, blah, blah, blah. And can you chuck a couple of free straps and send me, you know, the invoice for the straps? No problem. So, you know, within a week, we'd done the exchange and he was really, really happy. But obviously, I couldn't have done that with, you know.
Yeah.
With Amazon.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
There's a difference. And you know, I hope that customer had a really positive experience overall, even if the first part wasn't that great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Right? Yeah. Yeah, turning into a positive. So yeah, so okay. So then you moved on to KindleBooks. You say for music.
So I had KindleBooks before.
Okay, got it in the wrong order here.
no, it's good. Yeah, so I had KindleBooks before, and again, you know, one thing got me really interested in Kindle is you can publish it and pray, essentially, right? And so I haven't done anything to that business in 2 years. I'm still making a couple of quid a month, right? You know, $20 a month, right? Okay. And so I know that's not massive amounts of money, but in terms of like completely passive income, you know, it takes me 2 seconds to read off the bank statement every month and go, right, okay, cool, I've made another 10 quid this month. It's absolutely fantastic. But I think kind of that's a really good starting point. I think if you can write something, you can try and figure out how to market that and how to learn blogging through doing that and how to learn keyword research, etc. I think that's a really good kind of starting point. And then because you're letting Amazon handle all the kind of the heavy lifting, you know, actually it can be a really, really good learning opportunity that can then hopefully help you forward.
Yeah. I never got into that, like the Kindle world. When it first came out, it was there was a lot of stuff about it, and a lot of courses on it, and a lot of people doing it. And what happened? Did it is that kind of been the steady income quite throughout, or were you one of the first
books? Pretty much.
So you didn't kind of sell a load in the first couple of years, and then it kind of tailed off.
I think in the first year I sold quite a few, but it's just been steady ever since, which has been great because again I don't really touch it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's absolutely fantastic. You know, I get a little money.
Nice. When almost you've forgotten about all the pain you went to writing that book. Like, was it 8 years later, did you say?
Pretty much,
like, it's nice to get something that you put that F into a long time ago. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And then it was onto the affiliate site. So I don't miss anything out, did I?
So that kind of gets up to a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So tell us about how you got started with that. First sites, that kind of thing.
Sure. So after the jewelry business collapsed, I was kind of forlorn for a couple of months. I went and did a bar job that I absolutely hated. And really, I don't mind admitting this. You know, when the jewelry business collapsed, I was about 10 grand in debt.
Yeah.
So I had to go kind of clear that first, right? So I went and did this soul destroying job for a couple of months that was just horrendous. It's quite funny. I don't know whether you've experienced this. I walked into the interview and I was like, the main boss is inept, incompetent, and a bully, and her number two isn't that better either.
Yeah.
And so I accepted the job knowing that, and you know, I took it on day one, and everyone was dissatisfied with her, and actually, since leaving there a couple of months later, I got an email from one of the people saying, can you help me? You know, because we're trying to complain about Harry yet again. So so in that time, I was really confused about what to do. And I talked to a recruiter and she looked at my CV and said, you've really got some good digital marketing skills. Why are you not doing something with that? And that's kind of a light bulb moment. And I was like, oh, okay, that's quite interesting. And then I started to read. Well, I've been reading Spencer's blog, Niche Pursuits, for years anyway. And on the bus ride to, because it was at a university, so on the bus ride to the university every day and back, I would read his post. I think it's something like, the 13 steps to make £3,000 a month, right? Which just lays out in a logical form how to find keywords, themes, etc., etc., etc. But I'd reread that, and then I also, at that point, I found somebody called Chris, who was running Rank XL, which now no longer exists. I don't know what happened to him. He seems to have dropped off the earth.
Do you remember him?
Fantastic guy. Really, really, really interesting. I really enjoy reading those two sites, and I read those two sites pretty much every day on the bus ride there and in breaks, etc. And I thought, that's my out. And so I started to put together some small sites that didn't go anywhere. Story of my life, right? Story of everyone's life, I think, in this business. and then from there, I transitioned. I've built now one of the largest home automation blogs in the UK.
Okay, cool.
So that's pretty much what I do.
Awesome. So, in terms of those first couple of blogs are you able to identify kind of like why they didn't work, like retrospectively? And
So I started a tennis club directory.
Okay.
Number one, I knew I was never gonna be able to rank in the top position for any of the clubs because obviously Google was gonna promote. So that was kind of a thing. The other thing I probably should have done is approached all the clubs and said, hey, here's how to set up a listing. So then I wouldn't have to do all the work. Yeah. I then didn't do things. I didn't have a keyword plan, which is one of the things that I now teach all of my clients. And so, yeah, so there are lots of little things, you know, that were kind of crucial building blocks that I now look back and go, okay, right, I would have done it completely differently. I think now if I was to do something like that again, I would do like a tennis blog about how to play, you know, because they're long-term evergreen kind of things.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, there's 101 different sites on who to follow in terms of who's playing tennis, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's just no, like, certs opportunity in that kind of realm.
Yeah, that's more competitive, yeah.
But I think that there is still quite a bit of opportunities in terms of like product reviews and how to guys and those kind of things. So yeah, so that's what I think. And I think also the other thing is a lot of clubs in the UK, they've started on their own domain, and then the WTA, which is like, sorry, the LTA, which is the Lawn Tennis Association of the UK, have then bought some software that is like a Wix, essentially, right? Which is just horrid. You know, as a website developer, it's absolutely horrible. It just looks horrible because it looks all generic. But they've encouraged people to go onto that and to get like a custom URL. And so a lot of these sites now are ranking for three or four domains because they've had various chairmen over the years that have bought a new domain and set up a new website and then gone to the LTA site. And then, so the whole thing's a mess.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's one site that I had. Well, like nightclubs didn't do very well. And at the time, there was a big site, and I think it's still called Design My Night, which is kind of what I was trying to copy. But what they were doing is they were doing payments for events as well. And so, yeah, so there's just no opportunity now. I think that's still the case. And then I did one for horse riding, which, again, is still pretty successful. It's getting a couple hundred page views a day, so... But yeah, so running things with no strategy, no kind of...
Well, I guess, so, you know, you were literally just exploring the world at that point, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I should mention that, you know, the reason I kind of hooked up with you is because we're both moderators on the Niche Pursuits Facebook group, and I think we became moderators at the same time, like two or three years ago. Just a familiar name. And so in terms of... Yeah, I think, you know, it's a well-trodden path kind of going through sort of Fat Finn kind of Spencer Horse kind of route. Like Spencer's got a lot to answer for, I think, in terms of the number of people that he's kind of brought into the space, because I think a lot of us got that.
yeah.
It was the same with me, you know. Like Pat Flynn kind of ended up being quite broad with the stuff that he talked about. Spencer was very niche in like what he was talking about, and that kind of really resonated with me as well, and that's kind of why I ended up
Because that's how I actually found Spencer. Was he used to, we're now talking like 9 years ago, right? Spencer used to comment on every Pat Flynn's blog post, and Pat and him were at the time were, I think, friendly, if not like friends.
Yes.
I don't know about the relationship now, I'm guessing, whatever. And so that's kind of how I discovered Spencer, and that's why I kind of stuck around Spencer, because I feel, you're right, he's far more actionable and he's far more in line with, I think, what people want to do in terms of not building a brand, but building kind of businesses that they can sell.
Actionable is right. Yeah, I think all this stuff was very easy to follow, and then you could actually take action and do it. Yeah, so I agree.
Yeah, and that's why I think like I've stuck around Neil Patel for so long as well, because I think, you know, even though Neil is very, very, very basic in terms of what he's teaching, he's very actionable in how he does things. And I think a lot of times, actually, it's easy to try and look for the hardest kind of strategy or the hardest kind of tactic you can. Where someone like Neil will just go, right, here's the basic four steps that you follow, try that first.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of refreshing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah. So it's a simple game at the end of the day, really. It's, you know, keyword research, content, links, done. You know, internal links, maybe. And basically, though, you'd have to go too much beyond that. If you're doing that you're going to, and doing it well, then you're probably going to do okay. But,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So that makes sense. Like you had kind of, you know, there's a couple of first sites which you were just trying a couple of things out, and then you moved on to this home automation blog. Was that the next
one?
So, So if you don't mind, like sharing, kind of how successful is that at the moment?
Sure. So we're doing about kind of £5,000 a month, which is about six k, I guess. into the dollars.
Six, probably more than actually. Getting off of seven, probably. Six, seven. 600, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, something like that. But yeah, it's a UK-focused site. I'm targeting loads of how-to articles, loads of product reviews, things that are just generally what I'm interested in. So I started that as a broad kind of property site about 3 years ago. Uh-huh. And in the last year, I've really just niched down into doing more kind of about home automation, home cinema, garden automation, those kind of things. Because that's really what I'm interested in. But also I feel that there's an opportunity. Like, I can't compete with, say, Time here writing about, you know, the top 10 ways to decorate your undersized cupboards, right? Yeah. But I can compete with, you know, Time, who won't be writing, you know, 10 ways to automate your garage, you know, this Christmas, or your, right?
Yep.
Because they're just not doing, they don't have that breadth, they don't have that desire, right? And so, yeah, so for me, that's kind of been the change that I've kind of gone down. But the other thing that I've discovered, you know, is having the right plans and processes in place, and then trying to build out good quality team members, or trying to figure out how to get the best return on your time in terms of what you need to get done and what is actually going to move the needle. And I think a lot of people spend so much time, you know, getting confused by the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, and I know you see this all the time in people that are joining Niche Pursuits, the group, and I know your own group as well, you know, it's people always say, well, where do I start? And it's like, okay, do you have an idea? Okay, try it. You try it, because you'll fail, and you, the hope should be that you fail very, very quickly, right? And then you then come in and you ask some questions, and you hope to get some really, really good advice, and you kind of, you know, become a bit smarter. And your second site is a bit more successful, you know, you iterate like that. But I think, you know, people get so caught up on the need to have the perfect idea, or the perfect URL, or the perfect, sorry, domain name, or the perfect branding, or whatever. Yeah. And I just sit there and I think, you know, there's simplicity in just getting started, just saying, right, here's the idea. Let's just try it. If it doesn't work out, great, I've learned something. Well, hopefully I've learned something. And if it does work out, then I'll hopefully be able to kind of figure out what I've done, and hopefully other than be able to kind of grow it, or take what I've learned and put it into the next business. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in a mentoring group that's a fellow by Noah Kagan from AppSumo, and we do weekly calls. I haven't been on them for a couple of months, but we do weekly calls, and there's one guy who's far, far smarter than me, far younger, which is so annoying, right? when they're smarter and younger than you, it's so annoying, isn't it, right? And he's like, I want to start a podcast, and he's a really, really clever guy, and I'm just thinking, you know, we're all thinking, he's going to blow the podcast world apart, because he's, you know, he's so insightful. He's going to pick guests that are incredible. And then some average guests like myself. But anyway, we'll put that all aside. but he, you know, he's, we spent kind of 30 minutes going backwards and forwards. And at the end of the 30 minutes, I just said, right, I've got one very simple question. How can we get you started in the next 90 days? You know, because this was September at this point, right? So I was thinking, you know, how can we get you started by the end of the year? And, you know, he then froze. Because, you know, it's just because people think so analytically about things nowadays. They don't think, how do you actually just get started, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And I think, allow me to use a British story. So Alan Sugar, who probably isn't very famous at all in the States, I apologise. He started selling, you know, radios out of the back of his van. He didn't think, right, I'm going to have this multi-billion pound property company, and I'm going to sell Sky boxes, you know, set-top boxes to Sky, etc., whatever, right? He just sat there and said, right, I'm going to sell what I've previously been selling for my old employer to the same customers, but at a better rate and quicker, right? And that's all he did, and he just kind of got the money and kind of figured it out along the way. And I think there's simplicity in that. And I think that's what I encourage people who are listening, who are maybe don't know where to start or what to start doing, is just pick an idea and just try it. Ask for help. Yeah, and just go from there. Don't be too unethical about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very true. Like, a lot of people procrastinate on getting started. And, like, you know, really, it's just pick a theme, create a basic structure and get started, because you don't have to worry about how it looks or anything on day one, because no one's coming. No one's there. Worry about that when you start getting some visitors, literally just start. It doesn't have to look good. Google doesn't really care how aesthetically pleasing it is at that point.
No. I think case in point is John Dyskra, who, you know, I absolutely adore. He's such an intelligent and funny guy. He, I think 9 months ago, he started a cycling site, and it was the worst looking cycling site in the world. But he just said, right, I'm doing this experiment. You know, I'm not really into public case studies, blah blah blah. But he just threw it up there, and he said, right, I'm gonna, you know, tweak it and improve it over the time if I get traffic. And it's just like, okay, cool. There you go.
So, yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think just got to get a few of the basic things right, I think. I mean, you say it's simple, but, like, you know, the stuff that you can just pick up quite easily, you know. You don't want to go too broad. Yeah. You don't want to, like, write a review of a toaster and then a review of a tennis ball and things like that. You want to try and go down the silo route and stuff. But maybe we'll come into that in a minute with your site and stuff. But so in terms of, like, the niche selection, it was kind of more – For the home automation side, it was just more of an interest more than picking it because you saw an opportunity as such.
Exactly. But also the big opportunity that I saw was there are lots of American based sites that talk in a very American esque way, and there's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong, but I felt that I could do something a little bit more kind of niche that was UK, a bit more subtle, a bit more kind of talking to the market and dealing with some of the brands that are only available in Europe or in the UK, which don't get picked up by the big American kind of companies. So, yeah. So I just thought that I could do something a little bit different that spoke to a market that I felt was underserved and do it in a way that kind of, you know, was very profitable.
Yeah. So is it mainly a UK site then? Mainly UK traffic you've got? Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I think 90% of my traffic comes from the UK. So.
Okay. That's interesting. And I guess that's, is it a co-UK or is it a com, like, domain? Is it co-UK? No, co-UK. Okay. So that'll definitely point Google down that road. And I guess the fact that you're doing products that are mainly UK focused products as well, that's going to, okay. Interesting. So, it's an affiliate site, right? So you've got info content. I assume is it monetized through ads and affiliate? Is that the two primary monetization? Yeah, other monetization?
Yeah. So I'm doing some very small lead gen. That's, I think, you know, absolutely amazing. But yeah, with a, I guess you call them like a lead gen company for heating engineers. Uh-huh. So they've got heat engineers all across the UK, and I've literally got a couple of links that point to them, and you go fill out the form, and I get a tiny amount of cash every time somebody fills that form. So, which is cool.
That's good. Set and forget as well, isn't it? So,
exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So, and like we say, like, say you're using ads. How much traffic are you getting at the moment?
I think we're doing about 2,000 hits a day.
Okay. So 20, 40, 60, 70,000 a month. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty good. What's the split then between, like, your ad revenue and your affiliate income?
I think about 90-10, really. So 90 affiliates, 10.
All right. So is it Amazon that you're working with, or is it direct affiliate deals?
So I'm doing a bit of both. So a lot of it is Amazon. There are a couple of private affiliate deals. There are a couple of more niched affiliate providers through it, like Awin, etc. But I like to say this by my friend the other day. You know, Amazon gives me 8%, like, yeah, right. We'll just say 8%, right? Just because that's nice, nice round number, right? in the UK,
is that a round number? That's quite 8%.
It's a sliding scale, isn't it? That's why it's really, really impossible to say anything about it.
And I'm amazed that you're still getting 8%. Although, if it's a UK Amazon, you might be, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Right. But then, you know, a big electrical reeler here in the UK, which will remain a name that have just rebranded and some three brands into one, which will give a massive hint.
Okay.
only offer me 2% of the basic commission structure off AWIC.
Right.
And their product range is a tenth or probably even more into the some product ranges. So it just doesn't make any sense to go with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so for me, Amazon makes a lot of sense. It's really, really good. And so, yeah, so I just think stick to something that's basic, that's doable. Try and cut private deals where you can.
So you've got a few private deals on there, then, I imagine, as well.
Yeah.
Okay, and how do you present that on the site? Do you give people the option to click through to Amazon and check the prices on all of the places, or how do you manage that on your site?
So I generally, try and stick away from Amazon if it's a brand. So, you know, if I'm doing a private deal with Sony, for example, because that's just nice simple, right, for home cinema kit. Yeah, if I can send somebody to Sony's site, then I won't mention Amazon at all. I'll just say, here, you know, go to Sony's site because they'll look after you the best, right? And they're probably actually using FBA anyway. So, right. Or that they're using a third-party logistic company that's handling probably loads of different brands. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's what I do. And then the thing that I've been testing in the last month that I haven't collected any data on, I need to go back and do, is I changed all my CTAs from, like, check price on Amazon or check price at so-and-so to just check price. And, yeah, and so I need to go back and check all that. That's a thing that I nicked from Matt Diggity. So no, he doesn't use check price on Amazon because he's of the opinion that if you put Amazon people, then immediately will go and Amazon it later without clicking through the link, which I'm unsure whether that's a true reflection of people's buying habits. I think people are a bit lazier than that. Well, I know, certainly I am. but I just find it interesting. So, yes, we've been trying just like buy here or check today's price or... Check. I know Spencer uses check today's price and reviews.
Yes. Yeah.
And so yeah, so just been trying that and seeing if that's a differentiating factor. Because if that is, then I can redirect people to different portals based on what I think will be the best kind of fit for
them. Yeah, I think so. And I think you can also try it out having all of the options there at one time.
Yeah.
We've done that with a few of our clients and a few of our sites because. Depends which niche you're in, but then you get to cookie multiple sites potentially. So obviously with direct affiliate deals, they normally could be 30, 60, 90 day things. So if someone goes and purchases, maybe they purchase from Amazon this time, but you've got a 90 day cookie in them and they went to Sony next time, then you might grab that as well. So you kind of get to hit them with like three cookies or whatever, however many you do by having multiple buttons and getting them to check the price on each is the best price.
It's
different. You want to test because I guess, you know, the other argument could be, you know, they go and check on Sony through your affiliate link and then they go and check on Amazon themselves because everyone's got an Amazon account and then they find it a bit cheaper and then they go there anyway. So I guess, but it's honestly different to every site and every niche. So you might as well test multiple buttons, test single buttons, to see what happens. And,
But I think that's what I love about doing, you know, running these kind of sites for a living, because, you know, everything is testable. There's data for everything. And as long as you don't get too kind of caught up in all the different data points, you pick one and you focus on that one that you're going to optimize for, you know, then it becomes quite exciting because you then can start to choose different things, and try different things and see how that all compares. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, that's when you can kind of, I think that's where it becomes more advanced. We sort of talk about it being kind of simple to start with, but once you, and it is simple, but then if you want to optimize to get an extra, once the site's earning and it's worth optimizing for that extra 5% or 10%, then, you know, if you're earning nothing, 5 or 10% of that's nothing else. So you just go and optimize later. So in terms of like your like keyword research content creation kind of process now, how do you do that? How many posts are on there at the moment, and how many do you post on a monthly basis, basically?
So I recently moved from four a week to 5 a week. Uh-huh. So last month I published 30,000 words on that one site and another 10,000 words on another site. Uh-huh. Mostly written by me, that a couple of other things in there written by other people as well. I split key research into kind of three parts. This is kind of one thing I encourage people to do. So, most people get key research wrong because they try and think of the final idea before they've actually thought of the idea. And so for me, what you want to do is you want to try and list out ideas every day that you can possibly write an article about. And at that point, you're just thinking about ideas. So you're not validating them, you're not second guessing yourself, you're just writing a long list of ideas. And then every week, you should then try and just take some of them and validate them using your favorite keyword tool. But I don't recommend people using keyword tools to get keyword ideas necessarily, like at the start, because you kind of have to know your topic and know what the pain points are of your customers. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like, I've got a really, really long list of ideas for everything from articles that I've read that I thought, hey, that'd be kind of cool. I can see a unique angle on this. I can, maybe take, I can come back and rewrite it in my own kind of style or put my own spin on it. Keyword ideas that I think, hey, that's cool. Things that frustrate me as a consumer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have this really long list, but none of it's validated. And then I sit there at the beginning of each month and think, right, okay, what can I write about next month? And then I try and validate that. And off the back of that, then I can use keyword tools to then think, okay, right, that keyword isn't getting that much traffic, or the keyword difficulty is too high, right? What can the tool tell me that people may be searching for? So I do that. I also use things like Google Search Console to, just drag ideas out of Google Console, because, your paper ever rank for one single term, it'll rank for maybe 50, 100, 200. Mm-hmm. And within that, there are probably loads of ideas that you could create a separate article for quite easily that would then rank really, really well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that again, it all comes back to long tail keywords. Because that's what you want to try to be ranking for, because that's where the excitement is, I think, for me at least. That's what I do. So, I try and add ideas every day and then try and validate them, in a separate session. I then try and think about content arcs. So I think in terms of if I'm just going to kind of spray gun one topic, my readers are going to get really, really bored. But if I can take kind of two or three topics and interweave them, right, that's going to give people who maybe are reading the blog for the first time something interesting to read, but people that are coming back will have like the next step on. But also within those three topics, you can target different. So you target how-to guys, which is kind of the very bottom of the funnel. You can then target product reviews, which is the next kind of middle of the funnel. Then you can target product comparisons, which is obviously top of the funnel. And so within kind of three topics, you can still mesh together a really, really comprehensive plan of all different types of, stages of the funnel, and all different types of queries that can be really, really exciting for you to write about, but also for them to read.
Okay. So you kind of, you almost plan a month as almost like a content cluster of, a kind of one broad kind of topic, or more a narrow topic, I guess. And then kind of presumably, do your internal linking between all of those as well. Cool. And I guess, on your comment on the Search Console, it can be like a gold mine for coming up with ideas. I mean, you've got to be careful not to like cannibalize yourself with your ranking. If what you often find is you're looking there and you'll end up ranking for keywords that you didn't intend to rank for an article, or mention in the article, but because of the topic or the relevance of the topic, Google's ranked you for it anyway. And those are the great ones to pull out, because Google's ranking you for something you didn't even intend to rank for or even mentioned, but it's seen you as an authority on that topic enough to rank you for that term without even mentioning it. So,
I reached a case in point. So yesterday I was looking through a particular subtopic on my site, and I was thinking, you know, these two articles aren't ranking. And with one of them, I put the URL into Search Console, and it pulled out a load of different keywords. And one of them was just simply a restatement of the keyword that I was trying to target, but just more tighter, right? So instead of being like six words, it means five words, right? Right? And it was saying I wasn't ranking for the keyword that I wanted to, but I was ranking on the third page for the keyword that I wasn't targeting, right? So it was just a restatement. So I was like, oh, with about 10 minutes of work, I can essentially just update the title, change the keyword within the blog post, put together a new meta description, new alt text, and new URL. 10 minutes of work, right? I can just bump that post probably onto the second page because it's already indexed, and they're going to find the 301, instantly and re-index that page, that new page. And I suspect in a month or two's time, that should be on the first page, or maybe at the top of the second page. Literally, you might just spend this 10 minutes from taking something that wasn't ranking, doing a bit of wizardry in Search Console, and then tweaking the page slightly. I do advise people to just look at Search Console and be intelligent about this. There's everything should rank eventually, and I think it's just how you, what your process is, and how you, assess where you are ranking, how you are ranking, and etc. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Awesome. So, that's kind of so in terms of the keyword research, when you're kind of coming up with these clusters of each month, is this just because you know the space, so things off the top of your head, or is this using some competitor research, looking at the keyword tools, like what's that? How'd you come up with these?
Sure. So I think the initial idea is I start off with a product, right? And then I look at that product and I say, right, what can a product do? So I can write a product review, anyone can write a product review, but how can I be useful with that product? Right. And so some of that, you're absolutely right. So some of that is going and looking at, say, forums, Reddit's amazing, Quora's amazing, and just dragging out kind of the questions people are asking. Some of it is just putting the base keyword into, Answer the Public and just seeing what Answer the Public pulls out, or what some keyword tools pulls out, and then just kind of then sorting through that list and thinking, right, okay, what are the 20 or 30 logical questions that people are going to be wanting to know the answers to about this product? And then, and then just realize, then just kind of figuring out what articles are worth writing in the kind of sequence for them. And then, just sitting there and cracking them out with a cup of tea.
Yeah, awesome. With a cup of tea, I'm very British, aren't you? In terms of link building or anything like that, do you do any active link building?
So I do a lot of internal link building, and I'm really hot about that. And I actually track in my keyword planning document. I actually track how the anchor text rate ratio. So I try and get that around kind of 50, 60, 70%, depending on what the article is. Yeah. I try and build at least two or three links within that first week of that post going live from posts that are already ranking. I then don't do a lot of external link building. So I just rely on writing good content. I then rely on doing things like, so I found lots of people will pick stuff up from Pinterest, which is a big part of what I do as well. I'm getting like 40,000 page views a month on Pinterest alone.
Oh, so you get more on Pinterest than you're from Google, or roughly the same.
Roughly the same, but I'm not getting the same kind of click through rate, it is a big kicker, right? But Google indexes Pinterest quicker than it will index your site because it's indexing. So actually, getting your site indexed through Pinterest and Twitter is good. But then, you know, I do, if people approach me and say, right, can we pay for a link on your site? I always go, well, no, can we do a link swap instead? And usually I find that they have a far more kind of higher DR than I do. And so it all works out very, very well. And so I've done quite a few of those kind of opportunities this year. I've also done things where I've written guest posts for other sites and they've loved what I've written. They've just left it up there. So that's also good. And because I'm primarily essentially a content strategist and content writer, I can knock posts out pretty quickly.
Okay.
And I'll usually choose like a topic that I'm interested in, so I can write pretty quickly about it. And then it just becomes kind of an opinion piece that is, you know, keyword targeted light. It's not, you know, heavily optimized. And then they're free to do what they want with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's essentially what I do. But, you know, every week when I look at SEO Spyglass, mm-hmm. that's just my tool of choice. Every week I'm gaining kind of 20, 30 links.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, there may only be one or two gold links each week, you know, that are actually worth something. But that's still something, that's still better than publishing and praying. So,
yeah, once you get to a certain level of traffic, you start getting organic links organically.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
So what's the authority? What's the domain rating? Do you know the domain rating of the site or anything at the moment?
I don't know. it really isn't something that I focus on, though. I just focus on... I really just believe in being simplistic. So I have three KPIs, which is a revenue goal and... daily revenue goal, a daily traffic goal, so visitor goal, and then a weekly ranking goal. Right? And so those three are far more significant than how Google views my domain or how Ahrefs views my domain or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Because those three things are interlinked pretty much, yeah. right? And also those three things matter more than how impressive the site looks to link building companies.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah,
no, of course.
Because, you know, I can have a domain that has a DR rating of 80, but I could be making £1 a day or $1 a day, right? And sadly, that's not going to feed me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a good indication of where you are and helps you know what you can compete for in terms of keywords and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, for sure, I agree. Like, you know, that's not the end goal. A high DR is not going to pay the bills. Yeah. So,
no.
Okay, so I've completely forgot the question I was going to ask next. There. So in terms of the way that you structure the site, it sounds like you've kind of branched out into. Actually, before we go to that, I remember the question now. So I've just lost it again. This is good. This is good podcasting. Right. Isn't it? So I mean, I guess I was going to ask. That was it. The two questions. So one, you know, what I didn't ask you was like, how long, you know, when did you start this? And I think you said you're doing about 30 articles a month or 30,000 words. You said, but how many articles does it have on the site, you know, currently? And when did you actually start it?
Sure. So I think I've got about kind of 500 articles on that site. Yeah. But I've just, because it was a really broad site up till like 6 months ago, 9 months ago, I started to delete pages that aren't performing at all.
Yeah.
Or pages that aren't relevant anymore. So at one point I was near a kind of 600 pages, but I've kind of deleted quite a few. And actually my traffic has gone up.
Right. Yeah.
And so I deleted another 20 pages yesterday, and I probably will delete another 20 pages at the end of the week, or if not next week. I just come back. So I've been really actively focused on this now for about kind of 2.5-3 years, mm-hmm. I guess. I don't find that kind of depth of content is necessarily, you know, a good kind of key indicator. You know, I think it's breadth of content. So I think, you know, if people are interested in, say, you know, a topic, I think actually being able to kind of skew around the whole topic is probably better than having like 20 articles on one aspect of that topic. Mm-hmm. Clearly, every time you want to build the breadth and the depth. But yeah, so, but yeah, so because if you can write like an introduction to say 20 topics, and then 10 of them actually rank and 10 don't, then you can go right, okay, right, Google has obviously shown me love for those 10 topics.
Yes.
Then I can start to extrapolate and build out. And there's other 10 that you may think, right, I can actually come back to that later. Actually, that was just, you know, ridiculous. And actually, that's been my strategy in the last year. I've gone through, you know, there's been topics that I've covered that haven't got any traction and I'm not really interested in. And so it's been an absolute pain in the backside to write about those kind of topics and they just haven't ranked.
Right.
And the moment you dump them and you delete all of that kind of topic off your site and you redirect them, you feel far much better and you feel far much more positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because you're like, I don't have to care about that anymore. I can care about something that I actually care about. You know, and I start to build out something that is meaningful and helps end users. Mm-hmm. And doesn't, I don't care about, you know, doesn't help my bottom line. So.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely that can, culling the bad posts definitely can have really good impact on the site. Just makes the authority tighter. I think just generally on average, if your average page views per page goes up from that, that's kind of gonna see you as a stronger site, I think, in the eyes of Google. So definitely see that kind of stuff. So I was gonna ask you about the silos, but I can on how you, because you've gone into lots of different kind of topics, how that's kind of like panned out and how you structured the site and that. But I think we covered that. Well, I'm interested in your Pinterest strategy, if you're able to share something on that. I've had success with Pinterest in the past, but then they changed their algorithm and it just became different, and I haven't not had or spent the time to kind of figure out kind of what's different on that. But it sounds like you're getting quite a lot of traffic still from Pinterest. So interested here, like,
yes, you got any tips? I think Pinterest is like the fifth largest traffic source, maybe the fourth largest traffic source. It's the number one social traffic source that I get.
Oh, maybe I misunderstood you, because I thought you said you were getting 30,000 page views a month from Pinterest.
No, sorry, on Pinterest.
Oh, on Pinterest, okay.
On Pinterest, okay. Yeah.
Go right, yeah, sure.
So I'm not an expert by any means, but I think it just comes down to, the thing that I've realized this year is, I think it comes down to your visual identity. So if you can produce pins that are quite similar and have the same kind of brand feel to them, you then get people that will kind of associate you with that and will associate your website with that topic.
Yeah.
I noticed this last night on YouTube, on the mobile app, eBay are doing this, running this ad. It's probably in the UK, but they're running this ad where they have the eBay logo on the bottom right. And then the call out is in the first letters in the eBay colors down the left hand side. Yeah. And I thought it was genius because it's got their hallmark of their brand in the spot that you're instantly drawn to without being kind of overly obvious. Uh-huh. And so I thought that was really genius because it's reinforcing their brand and making you think about their brand without actually saying we're eBay. Uh-huh. And so I thought that was really, really clever. I think that works on Pinterest as well. I think if you try and build up a strong identity, then yeah, you're fine. But yeah, no, I just use a really simple template. I'm just doing the basics, right? And my Pinterest strategy is essentially a minimal viable product. Have a template, change it for every article. If I then retitle an article or change the URL, then I build a new pin. And then just go and change the URL for the old one as well so that you're getting more and more pins out there. Yeah, it's just, again, minimal viable product, simple, and just keep doing it because it's working and it's bringing me traffic.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I've had sites in the past that, you know, 40-50% of my traffic, you know, is from Pinterest. Like I say, the algorithm got changed. But, you know, it was, I mean, maybe should talk to John Dykstra as well, because like you know, pretty much doing kind of, he had a course on Pinterest, and I don't know if that's still kind of relevant now, given the algorithm change.
Yeah.
But I was basically doing something very similar to that, and that kind of worked. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if he's still, what kind of success he's seeing still on that. I'll have to speak to him about that and find out what he's doing.
Yeah, I will. I'll pop in an email.
Yeah.
So.
Cool, yeah. Yeah. All right. So I guess before we wrap it up, like, I guess, have you got any, what's your plans going forward? Are you going to grow this site? Are you planning to start any new sites? Like, what's your plans for the next 12 months?
12 months. Retire to Monaco. that was a 5-year goal, but anyway. So I'm primarily building this to sell, and I'm hoping that I can sell it for maybe $1 million in the next 3 years. I have a little content agency that I essentially teach my keyword plan framework to other people. So that's just started this year, so I'm hoping to build that up over the next kind of year or two. So that's where I'm going. I do plan to launch more sites, but the one thing that I've learned this year, I've been working with a great friend of mine called Christina, who runs Be Productive EU, who is she's a process coach.
Yeah,
difficult to say, isn't it, right? And she's just been really, really, really instrumental in me building up processes for the business and thinking to the building up processes. And so I'm now at the point where I can go and start hiring freelancers than I am already, but scale up, and then reclaim time and use that time to launch some more sites. So I do intend next year to launch another site or two. But yeah, I am trying to get to the point where I can exit for close to $1 million, because I think that would be a nice chunk of change.
That would be nice, yeah, for sure.
That would be nice. And because my 5-year goal is to move to Monaco, which is
it's expensive there, isn't it? So you need $1 million just to buy a small flat, probably.
Well, so a student apartment starts about €800,000. Yeah. So yeah, so it's not cheap. I quite like to sell out for $1 million. I then like to build some other things, sell out for around that kind of certain figure, and just keep going, really. So, I think there are endless possibilities, and I'm just really excited about what's going to come next, really. I think I've had, and I know you probably experience this every year. You think you think you hit a plateau, and you skyrocket, and you get to the end of the year, and you think, I've learned so much, and I've come so far this year without really realizing it.
Yeah.
And that just kind of propels you for even further growth for next year. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a long game. It's the long game. And so you don't notice the micro changes over time. But when you look back on it, you've got to think of it as a journey and not expect to get rich overnight. But yeah, you're right. Like, you look back over, you don't notice the small increases, a bit of traffic every month. And then you look at where you were this time last year, and it's a whole lot more than you were. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us on the show, AJ.
Thanks for having me.
People did want to get in touch with you, what's the best ways to find you?
Sure. So they can go by, I've got a little content framework course that's $50 that's available at agsdigitalgroup.co.uk, and you can book me for consulting. I hang out mainly socially on Instagram, so it's just a_j_saunders. I'll send you all of this later so you can put it all up. Instagram, come talk to me. I am a real human on there. I post funny things that I find funny, things that I enjoy. I love interacting with people on there. I've made loads of amazing friends just on there. So yeah, please come and hit me up. I'm on LinkedIn, but that's very much geared towards kind of content stuff. But yeah, please, if you have any questions on agsdigitalgroup.co.uk, you can book a 15-minute slot for free. If you want to just come and ask me a question, or want to just kind of come and talk to me, please go onto the site, book a slot. More than happy to talk to you for free for 15 minutes and answer any questions. I'm nice and easy. The other thing to do is to come join Need to Pursuit's Facebook group, because there's so many great people on there, including, us as well. Please reach out and get in contact. I'd love to help.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, AJ. And we'll catch up soon. Maybe we'll do another podcast when you made your million. Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, Please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.